This is CX of M Radio, the voice of customer experience professionals.
Welcome to another episode of Press One for Nick. Your host, Nick Limsdahl, is the Director of Contact Center Solutions at VDS. Through conversations with customer service and customer experience leaders, Nick and his guests exchange insightful stories, best practices, and invaluable lessons they have learned along the way.
Welcome to the Press One for Nick podcast. My name is Nick Limsdahl. My guest this week is Jeff Duden. He is the chairman and CEO of Homefront Brands. And as we learn about Jeff today, not only is he the CEO and chairman of Homefront Brands, but he is also a published author, a Forbes contributor, and a guiding force behind 1,700 franchise territories across North America. I'm looking forward to the conversation. Without further ado, Jeff, welcome to the Press One for Nick podcast.
Nick, thank you for being on. I'll make a quick correction. I think that 1,700 territories was the company I sold my business to. So I don't want to take claim for that. But I will tell you, with Homefront Brands, we are on our way. We are a portion of the way there, and we expect to be there in a minute.
So maybe what I was just doing is speaking it into existence for you to get there.
Thank you. You just manifested a powerful future for me, Nick. Thank you.
Exactly. That's what I'm here to do. Nothing else. And let's talk about where you started at the very beginning from your entrepreneurial mindset. You started out by painting, and what made you get into that?
Well, I would say that most entrepreneurs are screwed into existence. I hope that's okay to say on your podcast, but when you have a need to fill. So my first real business was in college. I was a high school athlete and chased the football around. And I finally, my third college, I got a wonderful 4-year degree over a 5.5-year period. And I ended up with a football scholarship out to Appalachian State University. And I showed up there, and you take somebody from the city of Chicago and you drop them on top of a remote mountain in Boone, North Carolina. There's an adjustment period for everybody there. But I absolutely loved it. It was really a turnaround point in my life. A couple of things happened. Number one, I met my lovely wife, Tracy, and I showed up in January. We met February 2nd, 1989. We've been continuously together ever since. We just recently dropped off my 19-year-old son at Virginia Tech. So we're on day 4 of empty nesting. Seems to be going well. But we have a lot in common. We're both passionate about the same things. We're both constantly working on me. So we have shared goals and shared visions in that regard. But so that was a big thing. And then I got serious about school. And then really I realized that, I had a football scholarship, but it didn't cover the bills in the summer. And like many college towns, it was food service or those types of jobs. And that really wasn't going to support me staying there. So I talked my roommate into starting a painting business. And I had trades experience growing up in Chicago. He was an industrial tech major, so he was pretty hands-on. He had a truck. We went and bought some paintbrushes. At the end of that first season, we met the property managers that managed all the student housing apartments, and they tried us out. They liked us, and then we negotiated putting a crew together to take on a lot of their work the next summer. So we put together a crew of athletes that were taking classes over the summer so basketball players could cut in ceilings without ladders, which was great. Wrestlers could scoot around the base moldings, and football players could, roll the walls. So we put together a crew that would do 15 to 20 apartments in a day. And there was a period at the end of May where people moved out, and then a period at the end of July where people moved out. So it was around the clock for 7 to 10 day period during those times. My partner and I split $76,000 in 1991 dollars. And it was just a really good experience for a first time business. Doing the payroll on a piece of paper, filling out tax reports, all of that kind of stuff, tax returns and job costing and all that. So that was really what spurred me. And then I took one job interview after college. I think it was with a wine company. And I was just like, I don't really want to do this. So I just kind of struck out and kept the painting business going, and then ultimately parlayed that into a career in building a business in the insurance, restoration, environmental services, and disaster response space.
So what was the most of that summer where you had the wrestlers, the football players, and the basketball players all together in one room or 15 rooms a day? What was the most exciting and or frightening of that summer?
It was building a culture and, you know, managing personalities, you know, paying people money. And, you know, we even had my offensive coordinator who recently passed away, Coach Best, great guy. He had a career as a painter, so he had experience. So he actually painted for us in the summer. So taking everything from the offensive coordinator for a Division I football team all the way, to filling in some work in the summer to, all of these different athletes and showing up every day and saying, hey, what's the word of the day? And here's what we're going to do, and managing the logistics of that. I mean, it was very fulfilling. I had a coach that once told me, leaders are people that can stand on nothing and create something. And I am a chronic business starter, which isn't always good, because once you start something, you have to follow through on it. But you know, the exciting part of it was, you know, figuring out all of the problems, having success. You know, that was incredible. We needed another truck, so I had to buy a truck. So really just that first, all of those little successes that added up to, that feeling of accomplishment. And then of course, you know, I thought I was going to start. I was pretty sure, coming out of spring ball that I was the starting tight end. But I did hold coach's check until the depth charts came out, and I made sure that, you know, I was at the top of it.
And so you did, what I hear is you did make the cut as the tight end one.
I did.
Nice. And so staying on football real quick, what was your favorite game and or favorite play while you were at Appy State?
So I walked onto a school called the University of Northern Iowa, never suited up there. Then I played at Harper Junior College in Chicago, and that was an incredible experience. So my very first big college game that I played in was in 1989, and Appalachian State had a rivalry with Wake Forest University. And Wake Forest University at the time was a division ahead of us. They were in Division I. We were what was called 1AA at the time. And the previous year, we had tied them and kept them out of a bowl game or something like that. Somebody's going to have to fact check that. But there was a bunch of chatter in the newspaper coming up. Ricky Prohl, who ended up being an incredible receiver in the NFL for many years with the Carolina Panthers and stuff. And there was, you know, so there was some bulletin board material going on there. I really didn't understand it. They were in the ACC. What does that mean? But all I knew is we were going to play this football game on a Friday night or whatever it was, or a Saturday night. And we went over to Wake Forest. And I remember playing, I think when I got the game review back, I think I took 86 snaps that night and we won 15-10. I graded out really well. We ran the ball around my ends well, you know, caught a couple of passes, and it was a big thing. And Appalachian State traveled well to Wake Forest at the time, so we had a lot of fans. So, you know, and then they had fireworks because I think it was their home opener. So fireworks going off, we won the game. Our fans are all down at the wall. We're, you know, taking a victory lap around it. And then I think I got on the bus and they gave us two big Burger King sandwiches. And I remember eating all of my food voraciously and then throwing it back up into the bag. So that was my first college experience in big time football.
If that doesn't make a great podcast episode, I don't know what does. So, you know, I think the question I have for you, because as an athlete, you are also an entrepreneur and you also hired into even from the very beginning, additional athletes. And so from your perspective, is there an edge of competition or just regiment or anything else when it comes to bringing on athletes that you've seen in hiring people throughout your career?
Nick, that's a great question. So my book, Discernment, is the business athlete's regimen for a great life through better decisions. And, you know, when I think about, when I'm hiring, I am always trying to hire the best athlete on the field. Somebody might have less training or less skills. We have somebody that's right out of college, South Carolina University. She's a superstar over at our Thrive More platform, which is a health and wellness platform that I advise and have an interest in. It's got Rockbox Fitness. It's got Beam Light Sauna. And she came in, and the CEO at the time was going to give the job to somebody else who had a year's of experience, and they had these certain skills. So if you looked on paper, it was probably, that person. But when I really dug into this other person's background, the things that she had done, the hustle, the things that she had done that were that you could tell she was passionate about, that really took initiative, and just the whole work ethic and the way that, I'm like, that's an athlete right there. And I said, and everybody else picked the other one. And I said, no, man, that's the better athlete on the field in this situation. I think that's definitely who you go with. And they ended up going with that person, and she's still there today, and she's a superstar inside of the company. And so, how can you measure somebody's grit, somebody's heart, whether somebody is always going to be looking to make a play and stand in the gap and not let balls fall on the ground? Is it somebody that's going to say, never going to say, well, that's really not my job and I don't care, so I'm just going to shut down my computer and go home because it's time to go home? When 5 minutes, that last 10% of excellence takes 500% more effort. And so if you can think about it this way, if you're a student in school and you go to, you show up at class, but you don't really study, but you don't do anything wrong, you don't do any extra credit, you keep your head down, you stay out of trouble, you're probably a C+, a B- student. If you crack a book on the bus on the way to school, maybe do your homework once in a while, pay attention in class, take a few notes, maybe look at them, don't break a sweat, but, do the basics. You're probably a B student, right? I mean, that's A-, B+. But if you want to be valedictorian and you want to be that 98%, 99%, those people are studying 2 or 3 hours a night. They're taking leadership in group projects. They're making sure that they're not impacted by, poor performance of a group. They're actually talking to their teachers. They're doing extra credit. So there's people say work smarter, but not harder. And there is truth to that because, you can be solving the wrong problem really hard for a long time. You can be doing lots of fake work. It's a great book, by the way. You can be doing lots of fake work, working really hard, that's really disconnected from any of the outcomes, but you need to work smart and you need to work hard, because there really is a connection between how many tasks that you get done in a particular day, or how many pieces of content you make. With the conversation we had, how many pieces of content can you make out of a single podcast? Well, you work smart by using the right tools, but you still have to do it, and you still have to get them out there, and it has to be timely, and it has to be done. So, you look for people that, regardless of, if you pay somebody that's a poor performer $20 an hour, they're still going to be a poor performer at $30 an hour. It's not going to change, right? So, and then top performers, regardless of what they're getting paid, generally are going to do a good job because they're intrinsically motivated to accomplish things and to do a good job. And it's just not in them to turn in, miss deadlines or turn in poor work. So, you look for those kinds of athletes and you look for those kinds of characteristics and that kind of motivation in people, and you bring them into your organization, and they're very quickly going to learn whatever it is they need to learn. Now, I wouldn't do that if they were operating on my heart. I would want to make sure that they had the requisite experience and education, but you get the point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's my coach always said that, you know, when in cross country and track, specifically track, is that you run five meters past that finish line. You don't finish. You're not leaning in at 5 meters to go. You lean in and finish 5 meters after, because everybody's going to be exhausted. Everybody's going through the same race. And depending on how much effort that you put in on the front end before you started that race, and your God-given talent is what you're going to feel and how you're going to finish. And you can, it comes down to what you can control. You can't control what the other person's doing. You can't control what they're going to eat. You can't control the environments that you're in, but you can control your mindset. You can control the things that you put in your body. You can control your sleep. You can control the work that you're putting into it. And if you can finish that 5 meters after, that may be the win or loss of the race. And the other thing I would say is, when it comes to athletes, it's not just how hard are they finishing and all of that, but what do they do when they do drop that ball, when they do not make that putt, when they don't finish the race in the place that they want or don't hit their personal record? And I love hearing that as well. And I think those are good interview questions, is what happens when you did drop the ball or you didn't meet expectations? Like, what did you do in that situation and how'd that make you feel? And what did you learn from it? Because I feel like there's a lot of growth in those storms and in the pain points. And so I think athletes go through that. No athlete, unless you're Usain Bolt or Michael Phelps, that are going to be the absolute pinnacle of success, they're going to go through those growth moments. But it all depends on what you're doing in those growth moments.
Athletes train. So you'll recognize when you have athletes, business athletes in your business, they're constantly reading, they're researching on their own. What can I do to give myself an advantage in this project? What can I do to give my company an advantage? They just have this way of kind of like, I know I need 4 yards to get this first down. Like, where do I have to be and what do I have to do to create just a little bit of leverage? You know, football is all about angles and leverage. How do I create a little bit of leverage to move this person in such a way that's going to allow us to get that, you know, and maybe I set that up 3 or 4 plays before. One of the things that we're really cognizant of, and we are hyper-focused on at Homefront Brands, is starting well. Because observationally, after 25 years of and helping, you know, thousands of business owners over the course of my career, if you don't start well, it is harder to go well. So we say, we want you to start well. So that means before somebody even comes in for training, you know, we have the learning management system. What are we doing to prepare them for the market? Like, what have we done from a personality analysis perspective to understand, like, what are the things they need to be, like, they need to be training to be in that entrepreneurial seat, maybe for the first time. But like, what are all the conditions that need to be set for them to start well? Because, by the way, if they start well, the second part of it is they go well. So that's, and if you don't start well, then it's harder for you to go well. So preparation, training, whatever it is, you're translating, you know, the athlete's preparation to the business's preparation. And then the third thing is, and I've kind of adopted this as a mantra, is finish impeccably. So finishing 5 yards behind is it has to be a habit, finishing impeccably, whatever it is. You know, you leave the end of the day, you make sure every email, we have a sunset rule. We return all franchisees call before sunset. You make sure that you document the notes and you finish you every engagement impeccably that you do. And I think it is a sometimes hard and lofty aspiration to finish impeccably all the time. But you know, if you set that as a standard for yourself, then it's always something that will allow you to finish. I know it's been all over the internet, so I even hate to mention it, man, but like, I use this all the time, and it's a, you know, memes are impacting our lives, Nick, in a positive way. But somebody had this thing. It was about have you seen that thing about the mouse in the bucket, where they, now I'm probably going to get calls from, you know, PETA, but okay. So there's a bucket of water and they put a mouse in it, and a mouse will drown in a bucket in about 15 minutes. So they established that. And by the way, no animals have been harmed in the making of this podcast, but they established that. And then they take a mouse and they put it in the bucket, and right before it's ready to drown, they pull it out, they save it, they rescue it, and they let it recover. And then they do that again. And I don't know, then now somebody else is going to have to do the research, but they do that a couple of times, and then they put that thing back in the bucket. Do you know how long that thing will swim? I think I remember it was like 2 days or 10, like some ridiculous long time. So, you know, we think that, you know, we can't finish impeccably. We've lost hope. It's too hard. But when you think about it, gun to your head, if you needed to get this done, and if you just said this is a standard, then you will get it done no matter what it takes. And that's what elite athletes do. They've developed that ability where they said, the goal line is, and then I'm going to go to the goal line, but I'm going to train even beyond that goal line. Like you said, that 5 meters beyond, and they're never going to leave work undone. They're never going to leave it in the tank, because we can always push ourselves harder. So, you know, it's really, you know, franchising is, it's an adult education business. It's a motivation business. It's a community business, peer groups. What's the impact you want to make in the community with your business? Who are you touching? Who are you impacting? And then really, it's a training business, because people can use a franchise to transform their lives. Relatively low investment. Now you learn all of these business skills in a real environment with real dollars on the line. And then you come out the end of it, if you've done well and you've done what you needed to do, you can sell that business for a lot more than you got into it. And now you have this skill set to move forward. And really, it's transformational in people's lives. I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but Mr. Richardson, Jerry Richardson, who owned the Carolina Panthers, was Johnny Unitas's tight end. And in his book, he shares that he was getting paid $250 a game and he wanted $500 a game. And they said no. So he quit and he went and bought a Hardee's restaurant. And then he turned that into 400 Hardee's restaurants, and then real estate, insurance, and ultimately National Football League franchise. So, you know, business, as you've learned and as I've learned, it provides such a transformational aspect to giving us freedom, security, fulfillment, and challenges, you know, that we all need to overcome. So I coach people about public speaking all the time. And, you know, two things. Number one, people don't know what they don't get. So if you forget to say something, don't say you forgot this. Just go, because they don't know what they didn't get. And number two, it's not fatal. If you die up there in front of the audience, it's probably because of your food choices as opposed to your, you know, being up in front of the audience. So, you know, challenging ourselves to do new things and trusting ourselves to take chances are actually part of our family values. Trust yourself, you know, fail fast and move forward. Trust yourself to take chances.
So I love that. I there's like six different ways that I could take this, but I think what you said about public speaking, for one, I did take a chance in ninth grade, and I probably told the story maybe three or four times, but I got up there super nervous. I had my speech prepared. It was probably word for word. And I looked up at the audience. It was just a classroom of probably 25, 30 people. And I burped and farted at the same time. And it was, it's serious. And it was the most embarrassing thing that I've ever felt. And I was like, you know what else can go wrong? Like, I could die, but what happens after that? I get down and I sit down and I finish the story. And I sit down and I don't know if anybody actually really cared. They probably just smirked a little bit, laughed, and I got redder than red and then a red Corvette. But I learned from that. And immediately I was like, I'm never going to publicly speak again. I'm never going to have a podcast. I didn't even know what podcasts were, but I'm never going to have a voice that I'm going to publicly speak again. But I stayed in that discomfort. And there's a lot to that. And, you know, when it comes to going in as a franchisee and you are You are not just that brand. You are your brand. You are your personal brand. You have thought leadership. And so my question is, how do you see thought leadership playing a role in guiding entrepreneurs and business professionals?
We all need a bigger table. We all need to put people around our table, into our ears, into our eyes, into our lives that have done what you want to do. If your name's not Elon Musk, then somebody's done it before what you're doing. You know, there's 7 billion people on this planet. There's very few original ideas left. And, you know, there are any number of people. And my real growth didn't happen until I started joining groups like Vistage, groups like YPO, Young Presidents Organization, and getting out there and realizing that the way that I was thinking, it was really my thinking. And the way that I thought about opportunities, I mean, I had strong beliefs held super tightly, and they were absolutely wrong. So being able to get out there, and I've almost gone too far with, intellectual humility and empathy. Like, I am constantly testing to make sure that I'm I've got the right idea, you know, trying to create a meritocracy where, you know, the best ideas win, and that people feel empowered to give the best ideas. And when you're dealing with a franchise network, there's just a richness and a vastness of experience that's coming in. I mean, there's people that have built incredible businesses, and they're joining Homefront, and they're, getting into one or more of our businesses. And, you know, you have to have this adult room where, you know, people can have difficult conversations and survive it and thrive inside of it. So, you know, creating that environment, I mean, and franchising is tough. It's, you're dealing with a lot of, you know, every, you're not dealing with a company that has 1,000 employees. You're dealing with 100 families with 10 employees each. So all of the stuff that comes with that is part of franchising when you're trying to help and coach these people to a business plan and to entering a market and all that kind of stuff. So you do have to, organizationally, you've got to have a good bit of empathy. So one of our values, our CARES values, is service, servant's heart. My favorite, my easiest definition is giving people what they truly need, not what they say they want in the moment. And to do that, you've kind of got to be in the pocket with people. That's kind of a boxing term. You've got to be close enough to people in a professional way and in a structured way that you're having frequent enough engagement and conversations, but enough that they trust you to tell you what the root cause of the issue is. Because I can't tell you how many times it's been, well, our market's a little slow. Our marketing is not firing. I'm having problems with my staff. I'm going through a divorce. And my eyes off the ball, and I really am having a hard time caring about running this business right now. What can I do to help? So you've got to, are you working on the right problem? So you've got to have a certain amount of empathy, and you got to have so we need people at the home office that are engaged with our franchisees. Number one, that follow a structure so that you're not wasting franchisees' time. Like, everything starts with data, little bonding and rapport. We have a structured engagement that we have that's productive. But you also need to have your ears open for the human side of things that's going on there. So it's a delicate balance. It's not for everybody. So we have to find just those kind of people that want to show up in people's lives and, can care. I mean, it's just, we don't need people that just want to move deck chairs around on the Titanic. We need people that really want to roll their sleeves up and be a part of these and celebrate their success when they have it. Because of that, Nick, I really, really empathize about your BART story in ninth grade.
It was the worst in the moment, but it's fun to laugh about now. That was a journey.
I have a similar memory where the girl sitting in front of me, taking a test, sneezed. had a similar outcome. Very embarrassing for her. I couldn't stop laughing.
In a competitive market, does your customer service stand out from the crowd? One way to offer a better experience is by moving your contact center to the cloud. But with so many options to choose from, how do you know which solution is the best for both your business and your customers? That's where VDS comes in and guides you to the best solution. They understand your clients' pain points, business outcomes, and goals. Then VDS designs, implements, supports, and provides 24/7 managed services. From start to finish, VDS is committed to finding the best solutions for your clients' needs. To learn more, go to www.govds.com or find a link in the show notes.
You know, you had empathy and I felt it until you said that it happened to somebody else. And now I don't feel like you actually were in the moment with me there.
I'm here for you, brother.
So, you know, you've touched on Homefront Brands. You know, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's all about inspiring entrepreneurs. So positively impact communities, franchisees, employees, and families. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So elaborate on how you can see the impact happening and how it aligns with your personal values.
We're a values forward organization, and we're very clear about what that means when people come in to visit us long before they ever come to be a part of the Homefront Brands family. And, you know, our values are cares, community, accountability, respect, excellence, and servant's heart. So, you know, and you got it. Values, you have to get them right for the business that it is. Zappos, a great example of 9 different principles and values that they had that really led to customer experience of a certain type when people would call in, and that culture drove that. You know, it was aligned perfectly with who they were, what they were doing, their product, their service. And people came from all over the world to see how that occurred inside of their business. So for us, we're purpose driven. We care a great deal about the widening wealth gap in this country. We care, you know, 60% of our GDP is driven by small business. That's not, you know, not in addition to franchising. Franchising has its own numbers, but it's a big part of the economy. 1 out of every 8 people, based on a study from 2021, was employed by or with a franchise organization. About 9 million people, 1 out of 8 people that were wanting to work in the country at that time. So a big creating generational wealth for families, giving people the opportunity to have security and freedom to build something for themselves on Main Street USA, and aligning that with a value set that says we care greatly about education, child education. We care greatly about transitioning veterans. And, you know, those are our board members reflect that. Ben Carson Jr. Reflects that. General Anthony Tata, who led all of our forces in Afghanistan in 2006 and 2007, and was the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy in D.C., and, you know, advises the administration on veterans issues and is very involved in that. So, you know, everything we do is aligned with giving people an opportunity to build an independent business within our franchise system and to be able to, you know, create something for themselves that's enduring, generational, perpetual, and can help them, you know, just to continue to improve their place in this world. And for me, I mean, you want to go back to the kernel of how that started. For, you know, it was a light bulb moment for me. So I built the painting business. My younger brother Mike was putting himself through college, getting an accounting degree. He ended up as the Carolina Panthers CFO, actually, and he helped Mr. Richardson sell the team in 2018, $2.4 billion transaction, largest in sport history at the time. So here's a guy who was at a junior college, came out, took over a painting business, put himself through college, did real well in school, got an accounting degree, went to Arthur Andersen for 8 years, then went to the Carolina Panthers for 16, and, you know, stood himself up on that entrepreneurial thing. But the point inside of it is that when I was in Florida and I needed to start my business at Vanaclean, we had 4 partners and the buy-in was $5,000. So to start a company that ultimately 24 years, 11 months later, I would sell with 240 locations in 37 states, I needed $5,000 to buy in. So I had a four-cylinder Toyota pickup truck, and I came back to Boone, North Carolina, and we had a friendly banker, and she was wonderful. I think it was First Union Bank at the time, and very friendly. We banked there, but you know, we weren't a big customer. And I had paid off my truck. So I went and I said, what loan will you give me on this truck? And she said, well, I said, I need $5,000. She goes, I can loan you $5,000 on this truck. So I took the $5,000 loan. I got a payment book. I handed the payment book to my brother, Mike. And I said, hey, here's a truck and a payment book. When you pay it off, it's yours. I'm taking the $5,000 and I'm going to go start this business that would eventually turn into Advantaclean. And that's how I fund. That's how I got my in. But as the painting business was rolling and they were continuing with the accounts, I also took a royalty off of that. So there was a percentage of, we looked at it, my partner and I, and the money that was left over in the account after my brother and his brother paid themselves. And then we kind of split the money up, but I also benefited from that. So what I learned was, number one, I can take a chance. I can go buy a paintbrush and a ladder, talk somebody into doing a business with me and build a successful business. Number two, I can take that business, transfer it to somebody else and let them impact their lives in a positive way by operating that business. And number three, I could continue to get financial benefit. I could get paid then for what I did and what I knew in the terms of the $5,000 and the whatever money, you know, I took out of it for the time that they operated the business, which was very, very helpful because when we started our business, we weren't taking salaries. So that was really important money for me at the time too. So for me, I was like, wow, I can figure something out, build it, help somebody to help themselves with it. And there can be an economic benefit for me. That's franchising. Like in a nutshell, that's basically, you know, what it is. It's a shared tenant model. It's a multi-tenant shared service model where all of the franchise owners and the franchisor are working together to create shared equity in all of our businesses together and build a brand and win customers and those types of things. So, you know, I got exposed to franchise companies that were working in South Florida, working Hurricane Andrew. So I really had my eye on franchising from the very beginning.
And so since you started, how has the franchise industry changed?
Quite a bit, really. So the way I look at franchising is there's six pillars to franchise. And if you're going to be a quality franchisor or a responsible franchisor, there's really six areas that you break it down into. And it's franchise development, marketing, operations, technology, business office, and then something we call customer voice, letting the voice of the customer fall directly on your ears and, you know, whether it be with technology or call center, things like that. It used to be that the franchisor really couldn't effectively do any of those. Everything was at the location. The technology wasn't available. So, you know, here's a business card. You come to training. We'll see you at convention in a year. And, you know, send in your reports, send in your money, use our marketing collaterals. And, you know, that was a lot of what franchising was. Maybe they sold some products into it, but it was very much super independent business owners. And then as technology has evolved, the lines have shifted as to who does what. And so, for example, you can now run a very effective call or sales center, and you can participate that much deeper inside of the customer acquisition phase of a business. At Advantaclean, we had 16 full-time equivalents that answered over 250,000 inbound phone calls a year and booked every mold appointment and dispatched every water damage and so on and so on and quoted certain things. And, you know, and that replaced, 300 to 400 operators out in the network if they would all had to get an office and a desk and a phone system and all of that. So that's a leverage model, right? Blue ocean strategy, you know, anywhere over along the value innovation curve that you can engineer out cost and increase the utility of a service. I mean, that's kind of a blue ocean. So you can do that in customer acquisition. And do we want to make everybody have to sit in their computer every day and, you know, figure out how to do Google ads, or do we want to centralize and outsource those things? So, you know, so as you look at it in every way, the franchise industry has become more and more sophisticated, and can shift the way things get done for the benefit of the entire system.
Yeah, I love that. Trying to find ways to do more with less. And then also with the voice of the customer, how are you listening to them? How are you focusing on that experience? And how are you trying to find ways to remove that friction along the way? Because it's so much easier. We talked about this prior, is so much easier to just go to that next company and they're going to promise you that you're going to do it for cheaper or the same price for a better experience. And if they do that or not, we're not sure, right? You never know what that looks like. But if you don't actually have that as your North Star or one of your six pillars, then it's never going to be a focus, and you're never going to focus on that customer lifetime value. So, you know, one question I had is around, based off of everything that you know, you have a plethora of experience in that entrepreneurial mindset, and obviously inside that franchise industry. So when it comes to aspiring entrepreneurs, what advice would you give to them who are looking to make an impact and grow a successful business?
I'll tell you, the first thing I would do is make sure that you, a couple of things. Number one, read. And anything that I would say right now would be right out of my book, Discernment. Yep. You know, start, right? Just start. Start a side hustle. Just start. Take action immediately. You can talk about it all you want to, and you need to think about it. But at the end of the day, you can't fix anything until there's volume running through it. So you need to start doing something, whatever that is. I don't care if you go out and buy 3D printers and do aftermarket RC bumpers and sell them on Etsy. Like, you will learn sales, you will learn marketing, you'll learn digital, you'll learn production, you'll learn shipping, you'll learn all of these things in a simple little business like that. So if you want to be an entrepreneur, you know, start. Second thing is get out of your house. I know we're in the digital age. I understand that. And there's a lot that you can do, and there's a lot of people that you can get engaged with online. And in addition to that, there's people and places that you can go to get you exposed to people that have been where you are and that have done what you aspire to do. So it's just, you have to constantly increase your thinking power, and power happens when the group meets. And if you, you know, you will never effectively, individually be able to overcome your self-limiting beliefs. And, you know, there's a quote that I've heard, it's not mine, but, you know, we all have these, well, the way I kick off training is I say, look, you're going to hear things you're uncomfortable with. And what you're going to do when you're uncomfortable is you're going to have a dialogue in your head that says, this is probably not important, so I'm going to think about something that I like doing better. You know, and if you're an engineer, you're going to think about how to reorganize the truck versus doing sales. If you're a sales, you know, if you're an IT person, you're going to send back four pages about how to eliminate three clicks in the system. Everybody has their comfort things that they default back to, right? And you know, maybe these things are self-limiting beliefs. So, you know, the quote is, if you argue for your limitations, which we all do, then you get to keep them. And that is true, because I am constantly, like, if I, let's just say I just decided today that I wanted to be an Alaskan fishing guide. Well, if I started making decisions against that today, it won't happen tomorrow, but 6 months from now, I would probably be there. Now, I could say, well, I don't live there and I've got all this other stuff going on, and, you know, what do I know about that? And do they even hire people? Whatever it is, you know, I can't, how do I get, but, you know, it's, I mean, we are all just, we're all the same set of molecules. And, you know, if somebody else has done something, then you can too. So getting the courage to, you know, to be fearless and to understand that you're not going to get to where you want to go mistake-free. So you need to, the faster you make mistakes, the faster you're going to get to where you want to go. There's no such thing as mistake-free ball, man. You are going to, you know, you're going to miss. So I would say, you know, just start, get around people that are going to stretch your thinking and that are going to, you know, show you, a different, that have overcome the things that you need to overcome, and trust yourself to take chances and realize that things aren't fatal, and things will always work out so long as you don't quit. The only thing that you can do to fail is to quit early, in my opinion. I mean, Blockbuster might disagree, but, you know, I mean, there are some things that are outside of our control, but generally, you know, entrepreneurs are going to, very rarely do they end up doing the first thing that they started. You know, it's a constant iteration of focus, taking what you've learned, taking your new contacts, your new experiences, any of the assets that you've put together, whether it be intellectual capital, capital, human capital. And then you take those and you say, oh, I can reorganize these in this way and now take advantage of that opportunity. If you're never in the game, then you can't win, and you must be present to win. And success in life is achieved by winning in the opportunity that you're in. It's not backwards. It's not around. It's winning the opportunity and you're in, because those are the people that get the next opportunity presented to them.
There's too many in this life that focus on the what ifs and or the I can'ts. And if you focus on the what ifs, then you're not actually looking. You have your horse blinders on backwards, and you're looking backwards, and hopefully you see in the rearview mirror of what you didn't do instead of the success that you could potentially have by setting those clear goals and reaching towards them. And like you said, fail forward. Don't just fail and make the same mistakes 5, 6, 7 more times. That's just, that is the definition of insanity. Like, don't do that. For all the listeners, you touched on your book, but it is called Discernment, The Business Athlete's Regimen for a Great Life Through Better Decisions. Inside that book, you talked about the significance of having a clear vision and well-defined goals in relation to making better decisions. Maybe go into detail a little bit on that.
Yes, so the book is really about, you know, fundamentally, the quality of our decisions determines the quality of our life and the velocity of our businesses. And wisdom is a cumulative asset. And here's what I mean by that. When you perceive somebody to be wise, generally they're older or they've got a lot of experience. So, and what they've done is they've accumulated models of thoughts around things. So, you know, as I've gone through life and had failures, you know, you create these models of thought. So now when that comes up, you have a context or a filter with which to run that. How are you going to decide about that, you know, right now? Wisdom is really models of thought accumulated over a lifetime applied to a present day situation. And that's all it is. And, you know, what are your filters? You know, are your values or your personal values worked out? When I sold, my business back in 2019, you know, my coach told me, whatever it is you decide to do next, make sure that it drives you deeper into your purpose, because now you have choice and you have options. So, you know, have you fully vetted out your purpose? Like, what is it that really is, when is your light switch on and when is it off? Because if we can do things that are on purpose for us, whatever that is, and I will make a recommendation in the back of Discernment, there's a reading list, but Kevin McCarthy's book called The On Purpose Person, absolutely fantastic. You create life accounts, you run things off in a tournament, and you end up with a purpose. You know, I exist to serve by, and, you know, inspiring leaders, transforming whatever it is. So, you know, as you understand what your purpose is, then, you know, that might be a filter for you. There's different, you know, you can look at your life as a balance sheet. So there's different types of equities on the equity side of the balance sheet, relationship equity. In franchising, it's very important that we maintain a relationship. Back in the old days, like I was describing, if you didn't get anything, and, you know, what kind of a relationship would you have with a spouse if you only saw them once a year at conference? That's where the word disenfranchised comes from. People become disenfranchised, right? They're very unhappy with the situation. So relationship equity is a big thing. Like, what are you doing to increase the durability of a relationship by your actions and the things that you do? Reputational equity, you know, our names travel farther than we ever will. You know, are people going to ask about you, Nick? And people are going to say, yes, he's great, or no, you know, he's not. You know, you're going to win or lose deals without even knowing that people have asked. And you got your health and you got your wellness. So, and you know, ultimately success in life and success in business, anything can go to zero and nothing's 100%. So life is, every decision you make changes that little gas gauge of probability to 67, 68, 69%. And so the better decisions that you make are going to increase, not the absolute guarantee of success, but the probability of success. And your bad decisions are a debt on your future time, energy, and money. I mean, you strap bad decisions sometimes, like, hey, one time my wife bought a dog in the checkout counter at Petco. Okay, well, that was a 12-year decision right there. You know, looks cute, free. I'll take it. Right. So now, think about that decision. Did you, and it was a great decision. I mean, we love the dog. I mean, it ended up being a fantastic dog, but still, you just made a 12-year decision. We also have some 35-year-old horses that we bought when they were two. So, I mean, like, you know, your decisions, making good aligned decisions with who you desire to be and who you are is really important. So that's kind of, it's just a collection of models of thought and experiences and stories. And for people that are in that entrepreneurial mindset, it is a great read. And this is a popular quote out there, but you know, your life will be determined by the books that you read, the people that you meet, and the conversations that you have. And I will tell you, one of the greatest things that I've learned is that leaders get paid by the conversation. True leaders get paid by the conversation. The quality, if you're present, if you're on point, if you're communicating, I mean, when you're leading a business, whether it's with key contacts or key employees or whoever it is, or it's so important now, I mean, we have to get out and promote our business like we're doing right here. Now, the conversations that we have are what really makes is the difference that makes a difference in the end.
That is the best place to land this episode. And I'm sure there's more to come, and I'm looking forward to not only reading the book, and I recommend everybody else going to wherever books are sold and take a buy this book and dig into it. And but I would take time, if anybody who is a franchisee or a franchisor or even interested in owning a franchise, go back and listen to this a couple times, stop and take notes, because if you're not focusing on it, like you said at the very beginning, people are going to focus on what they know, and because they don't want to stay in that discomfort. And so I want to challenge my listeners to go and come back and re-listen to this episode so that they can focus on the things that maybe they're not comfortable with, but they know that it's going to help them make better decisions. It's going to help them set their goals and values. It's going to help them set their purpose. So with that, I thank you for joining the episode. And for the people who don't know who you are, where's the best place to learn more?
Happy to share that, Nick. Time and love are the two most precious things we have in life. And time, my friend, is always short. So you got to take action. You can find us at www.homefrontbrands.com. You can find links to our podcast there and links to all of our brands. Homefrontbrands.com is a great place to start. Reach out to me on LinkedIn. I was on Undercover Boss. So if you want to learn more about the people behind the product, you can connect with me on LinkedIn, just Jeff Duden. Easy to find there. Not many of us floating around out there. And there's a Vimeo link right in my profile to the Undercover Boss episode, 42 Minutes of Your Life. You'll never get back. Instagram is another great place, just Jeff Duden. So we tend to post on LinkedIn, tend to post on Instagram. Homefrontbrands.com is a great place to start. And then, of course, we have our On the Homefront podcast, which is available on all major channels, Spotify, YouTube, Apple, and all of that. But pretty easy to Google up, and you will find your way to us. And we would love to talk to you. We will be here on the Homefront waiting for you.
Awesome. Well said, my friend. And I will make sure that all those links are in the show notes. Best of luck in whatever you do. And for all the listeners, click on all those links and be sure to follow this fella. He's got a lot to say and there's a lot of value. So best of luck again, and we'll talk here soon.
Hey, listeners, can you think of one person who would benefit from the information you learned today? If so, please consider sharing this episode with them. And last, if you would like to receive all the quotes and book recommendations from all my guests, you can go to pressonefornick.com/podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Press One for Nick. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and share. Until next time, focus on your customers.
Thanks for joining us for this session of CX of M Radio. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit cxofm.org for more resources.